Okay, this is all I have to do? I guess I'm now going to be referred to as the hurricane. So I think, first of all, I was asked to do this talk by Kyle just to sort of share observations as a state STD director in a state that's had PID surveillance for quite some time. So again, this is not a lot of rigorous studies that I'm talking about, because we're going to have a lot more in-depth analysis that's been done in San Francisco, that's been done in San Mateo, and as well as the great work that Joan Chow does in looking at alternative data systems to look at PID. So I'm just going to share with you sort of some observations of what we're seeing with our PID data. So with that, I want to kind of give you a history of why PID became reportable in the state of California, because I think it's not for the reasons you might think. I want to give you some brief trends of just kind of what's going on with what we're collecting, and then why I think what we collect right now is very difficult to interpret, and a few comments about where we should go from here. So California made PID reportable in 1989, along with non-gonococcal urethritis. Now, why did we make this reportable? We made this reportable because at the time there were a number of local health jurisdictions that really felt like chlamydia was a problem. If we don't start counting cases, we're never going to be able to advocate for funds. But we also had counties like LA who said, well, this is an unfunded mandate. We can't make a disease reportable if the state is not going to give us all this money to test people for chlamydia. So to come to a compromise, we made PID and NGU, the syndromes associated with chlamydia, also reportable for those counties that didn't have funds to do testing. So we never really looked at it as being an outcome of chlamydial infection. We looked at it as a marker of chlamydia infection. So that was the history of why we made it reportable. Now, I'm also a person that believes that providers have very complicated lives, and reporting is not the top on their list. And you have to pick your battles with reporting. So I've chosen to pick my battle with primary syphilis, because our laboratory test can't diagnose primary syphilis. So I'm trying to get providers to think of primary syphilis like anthrax. They do think to call the health department maybe when they're thinking about anthrax. They don't think to call the health department when they have another case of gonorrhea, chlamydia, or other things. So we've chosen in California to invest our resources in the message to providers, not report PID, because we're not there yet. The message we chose was, we want you to screen for chlamydia and gonorrhea. So we've really worked on our screening in California. We've not really worked on our PID reporting. So I can tell you that we've invested, no, is that fair to say? Michael Samuels isn't here. But I don't feel like we have done anything to invest in other than having it be a reportable condition and having providers who are reporting. We don't know who they are. We don't know what they're reporting. They report to local health departments. Health departments put it in a computer. Then it gets sent up to our computer at the state. And that's what we do with the information. So those are the numbers you're going to be seeing from me. If you don't know, we in California have sort of in general dual reporting for most of our communicable diseases. By law, the provider has to report to the local health department, and then the health department reports to the state. But for a lot of our infectious diseases, we also have laboratory reporting. And a lot of providers are also confused. They think, oh, that's the lab's responsibility. I don't have to report it because the lab's reporting gonorrhea. So there's a lot of confusion, and it's important to know what your state laws are around reporting. So let's just kind of look at our data. And again, I'm hoping we're coming to see the different change. So we have preliminary data from 2009 here. So PID is at the very bottom of the list. This is looking at chlamydia, gonorrhea, and PID rates in women from California from 2000 to 2009. So clearly we have very low rates of PID with only 973 cases reported in 2009. Our gonorrhea seems to be going down. I don't know why. And we are beginning to question whether, for all our efforts of screening and expedited partner therapy that we've been promoting, although not everybody, we don't have a reimbursement mechanisms in many situations, that chlamydia at least looks like it might be turning the corner. But we actually look at just the number of cases of PID. Again, we see this downward trend. But clearly, when you start seeing data from Joan Chow and other sources, we know that this does not reflect most of the cases of PID. When we look at the cases we're seeing in family planning clinics, the cases we're seeing in managed care, you know, we're up into, you know, 5,000 maybe cases on an annual basis. So we clearly know that this doesn't reflect the total number of cases of PID, but at least we know we haven't been doing any interventions, you know, to sort of, you know, change reporting practices over time. I'm going to skip quickly here, did evaluate our PID cases. EIS officers always have to do a surveillance evaluation project in 2005 and tried to compare our case report data to our patient discharge data. And not at least surprising to me, there's a number of features here that we're seeing. First of all, you can see the magnitude of the number of cases we found through our ICD-9 code approach was much higher than the number of cases that we found in our case-based reporting data. But also, just in terms of age distribution of the cases, we found a lot more cases in older age groups from the patient discharge data compared to the number of cases that we were seeing from our reportable disease system, which, you know, makes you wonder whether people are thinking about only reporting the sexually transmitted types of PID in our case-based systems. And then we also had some differences, I don't know how to do these fancy slides, sort of in our racial and ethnic distribution in this sort of comparative study. And this was just a very crude comparison that we did trying to better understand who is reporting to us. We've also had problems in California with our provider information. We at the state level, we have some challenges. We like to stratify all of our cases by type of provider. And unfortunately, when a Kaiser doc reports, it could be Dr. Smith, and we don't know that he's working at Kaiser. We don't know where he's working at Kaiser. And so we've got some challenges in terms of the specificity and quality of the provider information that unfortunately was not available for this analysis. I also just quickly, my staff even has been and seen this data because I called up our great data person this week for the purposes of this report. I just kind of wanted to see, at least in 2009, what was sort of the age and racial distribution of these reported cases, be it that they're limited. And not surprised, I mean, I was actually kind of surprised. I expected to see more PID in sort of older women. But interestingly, at least if you look at the sort of the health disparities that we certainly see for chlamydia and gonorrhea in California, we're seeing most of our PID cases in, you know, younger women, in African-American women, and if you compare it to what we see for our chlamydia case reports in 2009, again, a similar picture of we've got these skyscrapers and disparities among blacks in California, and fairly similar, you know, distribution at least, although we have a much bigger racial disparities around gonorrhea in our states, where our rates of gonorrhea among teenagers in California are 24 times higher than the white rates. So that's sort of our general information we've been collecting without doing much in terms of active surveillance situations. So I certainly believe that we have major problems with physician underreporting. But I also think that, as I said, it's hard for busy clinicians to report, that we also make it really challenging to them when we have these surveillance case definitions that don't line up with how they are managing their patients. And another area where there's a huge disconnect is in the area of congenital syphilis. We've got cases that we report to CDC that we say are cases of congenital syphilis because they meet the case definition from a surveillance perspective that CDC has, and we never treat the baby for congenital syphilis. And, you know, providers say, why do I report this? This is not a case of congenital syphilis. So we've had this problem of the and the plus that Catherine talked about, you know, versus the or situation. And then also, if you don't know, the treatment guidelines have also been changing the criteria for hospitalization. So, and again, we've got challenges you'll see with our data sets that we've got people who are hospitalized and people who are treated as outpatients, and that ratio has been changing over time, partly because of the CDC guideline changes and partly because of our healthcare delivery systems are changing, where there's basically, you know, we don't want to pay for anything, so, you know, nobody gets to go into the hospital unless they're sort of on death's door. So, as Catherine showed, CDC actually came up with a case definition in 1990, and it hasn't changed in 1996. That providers are supposed to only report cases that, you know, have abdominal tenderness, cervical motion tenderness, agnosal tenderness, and they got to have one of these other things. Well, notice, increased temperature. Now, we're all epidemiologists. We all work in this field. Do you know what the temperature is in the case definition that you're supposed to report greater than of? Well, it used to be 38 degrees centigrade. In the recent treatment guidelines, now all of a sudden it's 38.3 degrees centigrade. How are providers going to ever remember details like this? Notice increased white blood cells. I bet everybody thinks that's probably in the vaginal fluid. No, this was based on leukocytosis. So these are the levels of confusion that if this is the level that we've got to keep people up to date on, providers are never going to report these things. Then, as I just want to remind those of you who don't follow the treatment guidelines, again, in 2002, we removed two significant populations at risk for PID from being recommended to be hospitalized for treatment. So although we want people who have bad problems and pregnancy, et cetera, to be hospitalized, but again, these are subjective things. Severe illness, unable to tolerate outpatient regimen, failure to follow therapy. Those are very subjective things. Surveillance needs very strict case definitions so we can understand our data over, you know, trends over time. And then we, in 2002, we removed HIV positive and adolescent women because there was basically no evidence that they did better with treatment in hospital, and there was a feeling that because the guidelines are evidence-based, we could not recommend any longer that they needed to be hospitalized. We've talked a lot about sort of the challenges of the sensitivity and specificity. It's not only the sensitivity and specificity of our case definitions in surveillance, we've got problems with sensitivity and specificity of our clinical diagnoses, which compromises our PID surveillance, and we're going to hear more about that. And as I said, you know, clinicians just cannot figure it out when we have surveillance case definitions that are different than the way they clinically manage their patients. The other challenge we've got with PIT is this is not a single infection. This is a polymicrobial infection. And so we may be having changes in sort of the epidemiology of a variety of different organisms, and we're all trying to measure it in one size fits all. And so when I say PID is going down, well, what does that mean from the standpoint of chlamydia and gonorrhea PID, which is what we mainly care about? There may be other things that are going down more, or some things that are going up. So I think we've got some major challenges here. Thoughts, how am I doing on time, Kyle? Okay. So thoughts for where we're going. First of all, is we've heard at this conference, and if you guys are not talking to the people designing electronic medical records and weighing in on all the Federal Register announcements about what's happening in the field, there's been so much stimulus money going to the medical care community, and boy, did we miss out in public health. You know, we're still in the dark ages of printing things out from one computer and then re-entering them into another computer. But I can tell you the world is going to electronic medical records and electronic databases, and we need to make sure those databases are going to serve us. We're not going to have to worry about providers, you know, figuring out how to report PID, because the system's going to be able to do it for us. So I think we've got huge opportunities to improve things, but we got to be at the table now when the systems are being designed, or we're going to still have problems of trying to understand this important, you know, outcome. I also think we've got to figure out our case definitions. You know, CDC has not updated the case definition since 1996, and I'd also put in a shout out for updating the congenital syphilis case definition, because that one also doesn't match with the way the treatment guidelines. Nobody does bone films anymore, and if you haven't done a bone field, if the procedure's not done, then it opts to being a case. When in doubt, goes to a case of congenital syphilis. Again, you know, are there some other alternative surveillance methods we can use? I think the electronic healthcare delivery system, I think, is going to be one of our huge opportunities. And then certainly, wouldn't it be nice if we just had a diagnostic test that could tell us somebody has PID? But I think we're a ways away from those options. We in California are sort of dabbling because we've actually had some providers, believe it or not, call and ask, I see that I've got to report PID. What exactly am I supposed to report? So we recently just had a little discussion about it, and we thought maybe, at least from the standpoint right now, as opposed to the complicated case definition, that basically any sexually active woman with pelvic or lower abdominal pain and no other cause for the illness other than PID and has, you know, sort of on pelvic exam, one of the following, just some kind of tenderness somewhere, and the medical provider treats the patient for PID, we're thinking about just having that be a case definition for PID. So that's probably my only food for thought. And I do have to thank Denise Gilson, who is our data manager and does phenomenal work in California, as well as Joan and Michael Samuel. So thank you.
Time for one or two questions for
only
Gail.
Only point of clarification, because we've got a lot more data coming on. Yes, John? I'm adding it to the question list.
Yeah, but you don't know how long it is. I mean, I think your point about coming up with a new case definition is an interesting one, and it is appealing that we're closely aligned with clinical practice, especially if we're going to be doing electronic health records, the better. Have you operationalized this yet?
We told Alameda County, the doctor was asking Alameda County, that this is what we wanted them to report. So no, in the true sense, I don't view that as operationalized. But no, we haven't publicized it. We were discussing it, and I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to get some feedback on it.
Because I was going to ask you, well, what's your suggestion? And then your very next slide seems to be your suggestion.
Yeah.
So at this point that you've tried to put it together, this is, in fact, your working suggested criminal vice definition.
Yeah, and we're going to proceed using it, but we'd like some feedback if people think there's other options that might be easier, better, or simplified. So, yeah.
I'm just curious why your clinical description specifies young women when you were...
Yeah, you're right. That shouldn't be there. I'm always kind of working on five things at once. We were modifying what was in the current CDC case definition, because they actually have a clinical description, and then they have laboratory, and then they have the probable case definition. And actually what was also in there was and women at risk of STIs, which I thought that gets really complicated because providers don't know. Well, then they're going to say, well, what are the risk factors? You know, we don't have the answers to those questions. So we took that out, and I should have taken young women out too. So yes. Pardon me? Yeah. So I missed that one. So yes, I think that we'll delete that from the clinical description.